Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD as we try to adjust for our screens and everything. This is our Monday evening
Hoops HD
report. Our
lighting director needs to be fired.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined here by David Griggs, the puppet up top, and Joby Fortson. Bottom row, we've got John Titel, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org. We may have, a special guest or two coming on tonight as well. I think we got Mark Emmert lined up.
Oh, good.
No, don't we?
I don't know.
Mitch Barnhart, is he coming in? No.
Well, Mitch Barnhart's going to be on the video notebook.
Oh, okay. All right. This is our Monday evening Hoops HD report. It's about 9:15 p.m. on the evening of Monday, March 1st. And we are here to discuss anything and everything that's been going on in the world of college basketball and a lot more tonight, I guess. But we want to start with some news, actually. Couple pieces of news before we even get to games that were played. Number one, I know you're all thrilled about this, that the NIT is back and going to be 16 teams in Dallas, Fort Worth area, hosted by, I think, in Frisco and at North Texas arena. Rocco, you're excited, I can tell already.
Hey, I hope we get to see some games with some teams that actually want to be there. Like if Duke gets left out of the NCAAs and Kentucky, I don't think they're going to go, but you might get 16 teams that actually want to like work on building their program and are excited to be there. So That's what I'm hoping for.
I'm hoping for the NIT to expand to either 64 or 80 next year.
Well, not this year, David. It's going to be 16 and that's it.
I actually think Calipari might want to send a state.
I don't think they get an invite at 500. So
yeah, I mean, they might.
They will be. I assume they're gonna have the regular selection committee, which is they'll pick the next 16 best teams. So
maybe ticket sales, they'll go.
Also, we're starting to hear rumblings of a chance for some teams trying to schedule games during regular season games during next week's championship week if they're done with their conference tournaments. So I think we discussed it way back at the beginning of the year, the chance that this could happen. And it looks like it might be a reality, especially maybe some of these A-10 teams. Rocco, I know
they're within the region of Winthrop. Give Winthrop a call.
I would say, Joby, I disagree with you on this simply because assuming Winthrop wins the Big South tournament, if I'm Winthrop, I don't want to play again.
Oh, no, but if I lose the Big South tournament, I'm Winthrop.
Well,
I'm wanting to play Richmond, VCU.
Why wouldn't you want to play? Because, like, in that case, you're not going to hurt your profile. It'll probably just stay the same or it'll improve, depending on who in the A-10 you play.
But you don't want to – if you were saying I don't want to risk an injury, I don't want to risk risk that the team I play has an outbreak that puts me onto a contact tracing list, no. I don't risk it if I'm Winthrop. I'm looking more like a team's like VCU if they're not in the A-10 finals. I just said, hey, let's let VCU and Richmond play each other one more time. Why not?
And Richmond needs to find a game to replace the game they played tonight.
Rocco.
Yeah, I was just gonna mention I've already heard from a few teams that, like, I know Drake will be looking if they don't win this weekend, especially, you know, as shorthanded as they are, it's gonna be very difficult to win 3 in 3 days, even with Tank Hemphill back if he is able to go on Friday. So look for Drake against one of these A-10s. Obviously, the Bonnies or VCU are low-hanging fruit. And then you could see a situation if, like in the Big Ten, if somebody loses early enough on a Thursday, albeit, you know, if Rutgers has a 13-12 record at that point, or maybe even in Indiana, possibly scrambling to face a Drake or a VCU or, you know, whoever they can grab there by Saturday night. That will be very interesting to see if we have a scenario like that. But all that stuff's being talked about right now.
And I think we've got one of our special guests connected right now. Is that Mitch Barnhart coming in? No, I don't know. I see a box there. It's not quite popping up though. So we'll work on that. Maybe we can go ahead and move to our blind resume test while we try to see if we get a special guest tonight or not.
Okay. Chad's the producer. He has booked guests.
I've booked us some guests for tonight. until we get our guests up, let's go to some blind resumes here while we work on getting our guests. And this is the night's blind resume. Today, I decided to go with a couple teams with some decent profiles. And kind of the question out here is, of these two teams...
You know I know one of them, unfortunately.
Well, let me start
and
with...
And I really like it. A lot.
Let me start with John. Let me start with you then. These two profiles, which one do you like better, if either one?
Let's see here. We got no bad on the left, but we have a glaring loss on the right. I'm guessing perhaps to a team named UCF, but I could be wrong. And then on the left, we have a lot of good in the tier one, especially a couple of neutral site wins, which even though I prefer the road wins, I've heard the committee likes neutral site wins. So if I had to pick, I would go with the left because of the more good and lack of bad.
You go with the left. Would you agree with that, David?
Well, I know who the left is. I can't figure out the right. But, yeah, the left is pretty solid. And, again, it tops out with more wins away from home. And it's a little – they're both really clean with the exception of the one sub-100 loss on the right. Yeah, I'd go with the left.
You'd go with the left? Okay. I think we got our special guest. But before we go to our guest, just real quick, Rocco, you want to tell us who these teams, two teams are? I'm sure you've figured it out already, right?
Wow. Yeah, Clemson and Florida State.
Absolutely. And Tytel, would it surprise you that you chose the team that you had rated as a 6 seed over the team that you had rated as a 3 seed in your field this week?
It would. I mean, Joby's been driving the Clemson bus for months, and like he has, as I said all along, very good points because, as he says, very good tier one, not anything bad. I did call the UCF game. Thank you, John. Yeah, I think that teams are. I mean, the OAR says Florida State, but yes, the profile, Clemson has a great profile.
Okay, it's not Clemson, it's Virginia Tech. That's who I thought it was, so that's who it was.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you what, we have a special guest with us. It is Mitch Barr. No, it is. Wait, it's John Stalica.
Do we have Stalica?
Welcome back, John.
Yes!
Yep, it's March 1st. I'm going to say it's March 1st. My team is on the bubble. The puppet is in the bunker. Yep, we're back to normal.
Okay. John, yes. Welcome back, buddy.
John Stalica back with us. It's been several months since we saw him there. I thought that maybe we had locked him in the puppet bunker by mistake or something. But
an understandable error.
Yeah.
On that note, though, John, why don't we, as we get you back in here also, let's go ahead and bring that screen back up. Well, John, let me ask you, we were just discussing this. Are you with Joby and what John T liked on the blind resume?
Yeah, what's on the screen right now? Because that is not a blind resume.
No, but it was our blind resume. It's Clemson of Florida State. Which do you like better?
I would probably go ahead and say the Florida State resume, even with the one bad game against Central Florida.
Okay. Right. Okay. So I think once you pull the team names up, it does seem to change for some reason, because, you know, the one biggest thing that was missing on the blind resumes was the team names. But
right. And everything is back to normal now. Hoops HD and everything. Stalica, try unplugging and plugging your headphones back in. We're getting a real weird feedback whenever you...
Yeah, we'll work again, Stalica's audio resolve. But let's start at the ACC tonight. And
that's not the ACC, Chad. That's a house.
You don't see the ACC on the screen?
You don't see the ACC on the screen? No.
Okay. I do hear a repeating person.
Okay, we definitely
what have a some great more, show.
We are definitely having some audio issues here again. We are going to try one more time, though, with this. Let's try one more time. Do we have ACC standings now?
Yes.
Okay. Right. There we go. We are not doing well tonight. This is typical Hoops HD.
Yeah. We're in March 4th.
No, this is a perfect.
Hey, it works. All right.
Okay. All right. Joby, I want to start with you in the ACC. You are the ACC guy here. Your Virginia team just come off a win over Miami tonight. But I think you wanted to talk a little bit about a couple other teams in the ACC besides Virginia.
Well, I think it's more of a prep for this weekend. You know, that everybody is talking, and rightfully so, that Duke, North Carolina could be a play-in, play-out game. But I actually think the real play-in, play-out game is Georgia Tech, Duke. A lot of experts have all of a sudden, because of force of will, while everybody else on the bubble, Stalica, your school notwithstanding most certainly, has been kind of playing themselves out. Georgia Tech has been playing themselves in with 4 straight wins. The losses before that were, you know, they were to Virginia and Clemson, 2 teams solidly in the field. And the wins have all of a sudden started looking good. Virginia Tech, obviously. And now they just beat a Syracuse team that a lot of us think Lunardi will put in the field tomorrow morning. So Georgia Tech is actually the team in the field. I think they are right now first 4 in the field, whereas the team on the right, the Duke Blue Devils, it's not like Duke is playing much better, but you can't, when you have so little room for error. I think that Duke kind of made the slip up and lost when they couldn't afford to lose against Syracuse, that team that's now in, or not Syracuse, Louisville. against Louisville. And so even though Louisville is also probably in the field. So that game is going to have huge consequential implications to the bubble. And here is the shocking statement that I will say. Georgia Tech's starting five, not the full depth of the team, but the starting five is more talented than Duke's starting five. Ooh. Now, yes, especially without Jalen Johnson. That's Georgia Tech has really good pieces and parts. The shame for Georgia Tech is that they started off the season. You see those tier three losses, but notice it was an 11 in front of them. They didn't know what they had. They didn't know how, but they're on their resume. It's weighing them down, and it should weigh them down, just like it should weigh anybody down. But we do understand that they are a very different team than them. I can't believe I've been a Josh Pastner cheerleader for the last couple of weeks, but it's deserved. This is a good team.
Chad, a couple real
quick
points.
You strongly advise they not lose their regular season finale, though, with a three in front of it.
Yeah. Very good point. But the win at Virginia Tech 10-2 at home, and they've been playing some pretty tough ACC teams. One of those two losses to Georgia Tech, that is a really good win. The win at home against Florida State's good too. But when you're talking about the bubble and the teams on it, to have a win like that or to have two wins like that, that's pretty solid. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, and Chad in particular, the loss to Georgia State was a quadrupler. Does that count as a win on the team? Because it was not a quadruple. It was the only quadruple.
Okay, David, I'm going to move right on to Tytel. I want to talk about a very interesting week for North Carolina, where you lose a home game to Marquette, you then beat Florida State, and then tonight you lose to Syracuse. What the heck's going on with the Tar Heels?
Don't forget, this is all after beating Louisville by 45 two weekends ago. Yeah, the amazing win over the Seminoles. They overcame a 16-point deficit to get their signature win. I think they're going to regret the hastily scheduled non-conference game with Marquette, like you said. But kudos to Roy Williams, not for tonight, obviously, but for becoming the fastest coach to ever reach 900 career wins. He turned 70 this summer. He's already the only coach to ever lead two different schools to at least four Final Fours each, and the only coach ever with 400 or more wins at two different schools. Huge game when Duke comes to town on Sunday. I have them as a 9 seed, but certainly not sure if they're trending downward.
Yeah, Rocco, let's real quick to mention the Syracuse team, because I think there's going to be people talking about them tomorrow morning. And I want your thoughts on them with this Carolina win tonight. Still nothing in quad one.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just a home win. They're a pretty good home team, and so they protected court against Carolina. It helps, obviously, but it's not like winning on the road and really moving the needle out to go
like
from
outside. Chestnut Hill? Come on, Rocco.
Yeah, I think they're best. They've only won at Chestnut Hill and at NC State, so that's just not enough to warrant inclusion at this point, and they don't have any other chances. They have one more home game with Clemson, which again would look really nice and probably move them up the list of teams that are out, but not enough to sway you in. They got to make a run in the ACC tournament.
You know what, based on Clemson's current net, that would actually only be a tier two win.
But it's
that game they should stay tier two. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rocco.
Well, I was just going to say, though, I think the way that it's broken down is just wins against the field versus wins not against the field. And then on top of that, what did you do away from home? And Syracuse has got not much to talk about there yet.
2-7 road neutral record, 4-6 exactly. Against the board. They're not good numbers. I agree.
North Carolina, and this is for our selection committee guessing experts, just 3-7 on the road. Everyone is, oh my God, look at Syracuse. They beat a team at home that's 3-7 on the road. Good overall, but just 3-7 on the road. Please tell me that the committee is going to look at that and say, well, North Carolina is 3-7 on the road. If a stupid puppet can do it, can't the 10 committee members do it? Please.
They're going to be looking at the fact that North Carolina is a legitimate tourney contender. I won't say definitely in, but
yeah,
a tourney contender, and they
that's 3-7,
and that matters, and that does matter. So, yeah, and a contender who typically has played other tournament teams to make up those 10 games on the road.
But, Joby, they're a contender that's 3-7 on the road.
Yeah. So, I think the bigger issue for Syracuse was tonight was that they had North Carolina down, 11 with 2 minutes to go? And North Carolina had the ball down 2 and almost won. So there are issues with Syracuse even beyond this.
Real interesting week ahead here in the ACC. Just some very interesting games. The Duke Georgia Tech game, Louisville at Va Tech, even kind of circle that Clemson Syracuse game we just mentioned. We've got Virginia Louisville on Saturday, and of course Duke Carolina. So lots of interesting games. Maybe more so than we've seen in most weeks in the ACC, given the disparity between the top and the bottom of this conference that we've seen most of the year. But let's keep things kind of rolling along here. And Salik, I want to bring you in and talk about your team, the Xavier Musketeers, as we move over to the Big East.
And my team was the Idaho Vandals.
Well, your second team then, the Xavier Musketeers, as they had their win of the season, I think, on Saturday against Creighton.
Now, that was their second win of note in the regular season against Creighton, where they at least were able to actually jump ahead in the first half and also maintain that lead. This wasn't like UConn or Seton Hall, for example, where they would jump out in the first 4 minutes, get punched back, and not be able to counterpunch along the way, even though Creighton did make a late run. So this filled one blank for the Musketeers, but now they've got to get some road wins themselves because they've squandered opportunities against Providence and St. John's. They have to win at Georgetown and at a schizo Marquette team to stay on the right side of the bubble, though.
Yeah, I'd agree with that completely. These are two winnable road games and kind of must-win road games. Otherwise, they're going to have to do something big in the Big East tournament, like maybe make the finals, and that's going
to
be a tough one.
But I think it's also noteworthy to say that when you look at the seven games that have been removed their schedule, they're not going to have the opportunity to make up a game against a team like, let's say, a Villanova, Connecticut, or Seton Hall. Thankfully, they did not have to play DePaul this year, so that's two landmines they get to avoid.
Yeah, you also got to circle the fact that they did not play Villanova this year. So, you know, if you look at them in the standings, you're like, well, 6-5 in conference, but they probably would have been 6-7 in conference if they got those two games in. But a few other teams I want to discuss. Taita, let me go to you, because this was also a heck of a week for a team way down there in ninth place in the standings. How about Butler's week?
I think the best of anybody in this conference. You have to also take a look last year. So this team started 15-1 last year. Then they faded during conference play, finished 22-9. This year, completely opposite. They won exactly one non-conference game, started 6-11 in conference play, but a huge week, back-to-back home wins over Seton Hall and Villanova last week. They finished the regular season Saturday with a trip to an inconsistent Creighton team. I'm still not sure how they beat the Wildcats. They held them to 2-27 from behind the arc, which is obviously great, but they only shot 9-20 from the free throw line. They still beat Jay Wright by double digits. They must be doing something right.
You say they only won one game non-conference. They only played 3 games non-conference because of their own COVID issues back in November and December.
Yeah, who did they play? It was
Southern Illinois, Western Michigan,
and Indiana.
I forgot they played Indiana. Yeah.
Rocco, I pulled up UConn's profile on the right there. This is a team with not a very good overall winning record, but heading in the right direction now.
I think so, and I think the position they're in at this point, they've played a few games with Bo Knight. It's clearly night and day, like the caliber of club they are with him versus without him. And I think that's going to be clear to the committee. Now they got to back that up with him in now, of course, too. Huge game Wednesday at Seton Hall, very bubblicious. But even if they lost at Seton Hall, I think following that up with a home win on, senior day, Saturday against Georgetown. And, I figure they'll probably land in the 3 seed for the Big East tournament. That's where they're positioned today. Get a win there, and I think they're pretty safe. If they end up losing 2 of those 3, like, and go out early in the Big East, they'll be biting their nails. But I just think that whole Boak Night conversation is voting pretty well for them.
Yeah, and Joby, UConn heading the right way, Seton Hall on the left there heading the very wrong way. And if they lose this game to UConn, I think they're on the they're almost done.
I think right now they're all red. I think they're a first four team, actually, only because other people are falling apart at the same rate they are. But it comes down to beating UConn at home. You can't lose those sort of games if you're in their position. And so the Hall, you know, has had it's had kind of that blandish year that I think a lot of us thought Seton Hall would have. And as a result, you know, they put themselves on the bubble, and we'll see if they can, how they play when they're squarely facing elimination, possibly in the face.
And there's the upcoming schedule for the last final week of regular season play. We mentioned, I think, most Saturday. Of these games of note already, other than, of course, the huge Creighton-Villanova game Wednesday night. That yeah. is one to definitely circle if you're looking for a game to watch in the Big East this week.
But Chad, real quick, before we move on, at least 30 seconds, everybody, the Johnnies, discuss.
They suck.
You think they're out? They were my last team.
I'll go pull their profile up.
But they do get Seton Hall, that same Seton Hall team at home. So do they have opportunities? Connecticut, they're not playing. They're playing Providence. They should win that one if they have any shot. But Seton Hall, maybe they have chances in the Big East tournament, but they probably, with those chances, I don't know where they'll be seated exactly and their pathway, but they need to beat the either Villanova pathway or the Creighton or Connecticut pathway.
Yeah, their resume, I'll
tell you this, Rocco, I was going to throw this over to you, actually, have this question, though. I see 5-8 versus the top two tier quadrants and a tier four loss. That's pretty bad, isn't it?
It is. They can anchor a little bit off the Villanova win, but the more Villanova slides down, the less that helps, right? So that loss by Villanova yesterday was pretty bad news for St. John's. I think if they sweep this week, they're still in the conversation. And then they also could play themselves into the 4-5 game, which almost guarantees them a really tough tournament caliber opponent. Could be a Xavier, could be a Hall rematch. So Johnny's got to sweep and hope to get in that 4-5 game. That'll guarantee them another big game right away in the Garden.
Yeah. And categorically, when you look at that resume, more often than not, that's a team that doesn't get in. But like, when you look at the resumes of the teams on the bubble right now, they're all full of warts, just like the Johnnies are.
Right. Well, anyway. That's why they're on the bubble. But let's keep things rolling here, and let's go to the Big 12, where, as we record this, we have Bedlam Round 2 going on. So we can't give you as you watch the second game going final. But, Tytel, let me start with you with the Baylor-Kansas game from Saturday, where Kansas got their win of the season and Baylor falls from the ranks of the undefeated.
Very rough month for the Bears. Started out the month with a double-digit win at Texas, looking good. Took 3 weeks off due to COVID. Almost got upset at home by Iowa State on Tuesday. Then had the 18-game winning streak snapped at Kansas on Saturday. They only made 6 of 26 from behind the arc, but they're still the best in the nation, 42 three-point percent. Doesn't get any easier. 3 games in 6 days coming up. West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. Good Lord. Junior Jared Butler, he might blow his chance to be an All-American if he keeps scoring 5 points like he did against the Jayhawks. I still have them as a 1 seed, but if they lose 2 or 3 this week, I don't know.
They may need these 3 or 3 just because of the – look at the quality of teams they're playing. You can't really fault them for losing these games either. It's not like they're going to lose to TCU, Iowa State, and K-State this week, which would be a much different story, in my opinion at least. But Joby, I know you also want to talk about Bedlam Round 1 at least, round 2 going on now.
Give the Cowboys some credit. This is not just as the – it's not just Bedlam Round 1. They won 2 overtime games this week. They won Texas Tech, and they won against the Sooners. Great pair of wins that propels Oklahoma State actually into the conversation of a protected seed. They're 4th. In the Big 12, that alone should do it. You know, it's amazing, and take a step back of the Big 12. I think there are 3 teams definitely out and 7 teams definitely in, but the 7 teams definitely in, every single one of them is in a fight for a protected seed. I'll be shocked if 6 do not get a protected seed, given how everything is. It's crazy how this has all turned out. Cade Cunningham is obviously the story of Bedlam 1, 40 points, 10 in overtime, just awesome. But he showed the first game of the week, the first overtime game, Boone pops up and shows that it's not all necessarily Cade Cunningham, as he had to be on the bench for a considerable amount of time. And so, yeah, this is a true team. We've seen these one-man teams, whether it be Georgia from last year, LSU, Washington, who get these great players, and the team just isn't that good to be able to propel it. Cunningham is the story, but he has a supporting cast and a hell of a coach in Underwood.
Yeah. Beyond that, Stalika, let me bring you back in here. West Virginia didn't beat anybody of note, but does keep picking up the wins. It is now in second place in the conference, and in my opinion, at least, is really towing that one line, especially with the way Ohio State has fallen off of the Big Ten. Would you agree with that?
Unlike Oklahoma, at least West Virginia is also taking care of business against the bottom of the league, because we saw the Sooners look ahead against K-State. But to answer the question about West Virginia, probably going to be hovering around the 2-3 line right now. But if they win the Big 12 tournament, they'll certainly be in that mix for a possible number one.
Well, you throw in there, especially if they could beat Baylor at Oklahoma State this week. They've got three games. Don't slip up in that middle TCU game either. That could be a bit of a trap against a TCU team that's had a little bit of life this year, including sweeping the Cowboys.
And it's back to back to back. I mean, it's 2 days apart. It's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So it's not much rest for the weary in that particular case.
Yeah. If we go back to their profile real quick there, Chad, West Virginia, I just need to see more quality road wins, I think.
Yeah. At Texas Tech, at Texas, at Oklahoma State. Clearly not good enough.
Yeah.
Well, at least they won it at Georgetown, you know.
Yeah.
Rocco,
unlike though, Oklahoma, they beat K-State on the
road. Well, unlike Minnesota, they've beaten someone.
Rocco, as I pull up this week's schedule, which you can pretty much circle all of them in, are you with Joby there? Because I think I am also I don't think it's going to happen with all seven, but we really have a chance for six teams on the top four seed lines of this conference, don't we?
I think so. I think Texas and Texas Tech are the two that have the most to pick apart, especially recently. But obviously Texas Tech, very nice win to recover last weekend against Texas.
But they also have the easiest week ahead. Both of them get West Virginia, TCU at Iowa State, though.
That's true. That helps. I think as it shakes out, we definitely could land with six. I don't envision seven. There's just too many matchups against each other between the seven teams. Even if TCU, K-State, and Iowa State loses all their games. So I'll stay six total is the max, and then five is probably actually the floor. So that's really good for the conference in either scenario.
That is remarkable. There's 10 teams in this league, and seven of them, 70%, are ranked 18th or better. I don't think that's ever happened, ever, in any league.
It's absolutely amazing. But let's move on to a conference. How about a conference with four teams ranked in the top 10? Let's go from seven in the top 20 to four in the top 10, the Big Ten, where we saw – Tito, let me start with you on this conference, because Ohio State was the one team that did not have a good week.
Dangling by a thread on the one line if they haven't already slipped to the two. 10 days ago, this was a no-doubt one seed on a seven-game winning streak. Then you lose three in a row, albeit to Michigan, Michigan State, and Iowa. The Illini come to Columbus on Saturday, perhaps with a healthy Io DeSumo. We'll see. Five of their seven losses this year by seven or less. So the good news, they hang around. The bad news, they need to figure out a way to win close games. I still have them as a one seed. If they lose to Illinois, then they are getting swapped with Illinois this weekend.
It's kind of funny. Last week, you talked about how Iowa had the toughest road week in college basketball. I haven't gone to Michigan and Ohio State. Well, I just pulled up Illinois on the right. And Joby, you got to talk about that. So let me go to Rocco on this. Rocco, Illinois this week has to go to Michigan and Ohio State. But towing that one line, some people have on the one line. This is their chance to prove they belong, is it not?
Absolutely, it is. And maybe the Saturday game at Ohio State's a de facto tiebreaker, but Illinois playing amazing. Got to be very impressed. Winning at Wisconsin without Io, that speaks volumes about the depth of the team. Clint Frazier and obviously Kofi Coburn in the middle. This team, even during the times where they were losing a little bit, they had a two-game losing streak in January. They have the look of a possible one seed. I mean, this team is built for the Final Four. you know, so they belong regardless of what happens this week. I think they'll put up two very big fights with or without Io. Hopefully he can go tomorrow. But I'm sold.
Yeah, I think I am too. And Joby, let's talk a little bit more on the bubble here. And yeah. And I know you want the team. I know you want to stick around with Sparty.
Yeah, Sparty. You know, and yeah, Sparty is a yo-yo. I mean, we had him out. We had him then well in. You know, we've referred to Maryland over and over again and Indiana as they're not going to be a play-in. Either they're all the way in or all the way out. I think Sparty's in that category too. Sparty and part of Sparty's biggest issue here is I actually think they might, as of today, be out despite the great win, Aaron Henry's heroics at Ohio State, et cetera, because and you can't really fault them for have you lost. Yeah. You lost on Sunday.
At Maryland. Yeah.
And Maryland, who's a tournament team. It's not like that's bad. But the problem they have is, yes, the overall record isn't wonderful. But here's the other thing is 77 net. Now, the net should never be a ranking tool. I've said it over and over again. But if you translate the net and its predecessor, the RPI, usually teams in the 70s do not get bids.
Well, look at this. Under the old RPI formula, which I have to have on the screen here, 108, they would be in the RPI. That would
– ooh, that is –
yeah, and it's just they're – the problem is they have some underlying components. However, look at that schedule. They've got the in-state number one seeded Wolverines twice. They have Indiana. They obviously are going to have quality in the big. Well, I don't know. Maybe they'll play a play-in game of a Minnesota or something. But I think if they win two of the next four, in other words, Indiana
is a must
round. The first round of the Big Ten tournament. And lose to Michigan, which is going to be no crime. I think they're going to be okay because, you know, then, but they need to do it. If they lose either Indiana or that first round, they need a Michigan win. And that is a tall order. But you know what? When the chips are down, do you put it on Izzo? It's not necessarily a bad bet. So we will see. A lot of Michigan State story is left to be told, but right now it is not as cheery and wonderful as a lot of people, I think, will have you believe. I think they are right now just out.
David, I want to address
your overall strength of schedule right now is 100, but it is really skewed by Detroit, Mercy, Oakland, as well as a couple directional Michigan schools.
But Detroit has kicked ass over the last month. Detroit shouldn't be killing your strength of schedule. I know it sounds funny, but they're doing very well. So, I don't know. I mean, the directional Michigan schools have been awful in the MAC. Yeah, Notre Dame, I actually think, is hurting their schedule as much as anything else.
David, I want to ask you about the team I put up on the right there, because Purdue, very almost quietly, won three games in a row. Is this team that towing a protected seed suddenly?
Well, you can certainly make that argument, not one but two wins against Ohio State, including at Ohio State. Maryland is so-so. Penn State might not jump off the page because they're not in the field, but they're really good at home. And Indiana also not bad at home. And a game that we were talking about a minute ago, Michigan State at Michigan State. Michigan State pretty good at home. I think that they have a path to a protected seed.
And Wisconsin and Indiana at home to finish the season. Not very winnable games, but two winnable games being that they're at home.
Yeah, I think Purdue or Indiana is certainly winnable. Indiana's lousy away from home. And if they get both of those and don't go out early in the conference tournament, yeah, I think that they could end up a protected seed. You're talking about, you know, a pretty impressive 15-7 record at that point with, limited bye games and some really good wins. And when I did my bracket today, now I don't try and guess the committee for those of you that read everything on the site, but I had them really, really close. I think I had them 17th or 18th. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you're asking me, do they have a path? The answer is yes. If you're asking me, do I think that they would belong up there if they win three of their next four? Yeah, I think they would.
Salika, I would normally ask at this point in time which games we're circling in the upcoming schedule, but I think maybe the question should be more like, what games are we not circling? Because I don't know if there's many that we're not here. This is
Nebraska Northwestern.
Anything involving the Cornhuskers, even if it Luke.
You realize Nebraska was doing ugly things to Rutgers tonight, so I think we have to give the Huskers a little love.
Yeah, Rutgers, it's kind of important that they win this game at Minnesota on Saturday. Otherwise, I think they suddenly find themselves squarely on the bubble, but win that game.
But I'm going to get back to Lassie.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
But I will get to the Indiana-Purdue game as one we need to watch, because I think that's going to be four straight calendar years, if the Boilers win this, that the Hoosiers are going to be winless against their in-state rivals. That is not going to sit well with the folks down in Bloomington.
Ooh, I did not realize that.
Does Archie Miller need to be on the hot seat tonight? We'll find out.
Oh, the hot seat.
We are doing a new hot seat.
The real hot seat.
And here's the issue is Indiana has a tough road. If they're already struggling on the road. Indiana at 12-12, they're out right now, and they're well out. They can play their way in, but, man, you know, all these people say, well, the Big Ten's got 10 teams locked in. Well, I point you to the Hoosiers, because unless they pull a rabbit out of the hat by winning on the road at Sparty and such, it's not happening, guys. We're looking at 9 teams, maybe 8 if Sparty blows up in the Big Ten tournament.
Let's jump over to the SEC now. And as the screen loads up here, and we are seeing Rocco, this Arkansas team, just continuing to look so darn good, to go from, I was arguing they didn't even belong in the field a few weeks ago, to now towing the 4 line, maybe even higher than that.
Right. Yeah. I think they're towing the 3 probably.
Right.
Yes. It's, you know, doing a phenomenal job, you know, strung together 6 wins in a row. I would say 4 of those 6 are against tourney caliber, right? You got Mizzou, Florida, Bama, LSU all in a row now. Playing with a very high level of confidence, you know, took care of LSU. It was only an 8-point win, but it seemed like a lot larger. And, you know, the sky's the limit. The thing about Arkansas, even when we thought they were teetering on the cut line, is they never had the bad losses. They still don't have any. Their losses are Mizzou, Tennessee, LSU, Bama, and Oak State. So things look beautiful for them when you start comparing them even to some of the Big 12 teams like Texas and Texas Tech, who do have some home losses and just a larger amount of losses altogether. Arkansas starts to stand out, and they can anchor with the Alabama win. I think Razorback's in great shape if they can just take care of South Carolina and A&M this week, which they definitely should do both.
Is that A&M game even on? Is A&M back in action?
So far.
Okay.
Not officially, but it's still calendar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, shouldn't it be the same? I mean, have you seen A&M? They're not very good. So whether they're back on or not, just chalk it up as a win.
Tytel. Another team that had a pretty good week was Florida, including, I think, putting the end of anybody that was hoping that Kentucky could somehow turn things around, that stake through the heart, I think, this weekend.
Well said. So this team had a speed bump in early February, back-to-back losses against South Carolina and Arkansas. They've now won 3 in a row, beat Georgia, Auburn, and Kentucky, as Chad said. They finish up this week with a Missouri team that's lost 4 of 5 and a Tennessee team that's lost 3 of 5. If they played those games last month, I'd be very concerned. Now I think might be favored. And it's going to be a family affair for the last one, because Florida coach Mike White's brother Danny was hired as the Vols AD in January. It should be very interesting. Sophomore Trey Mann, he only had 9 points in the loss at Arkansas. Since then, on the 3-game winning streak, unbelievable. 18 points a game. He's only missed 1 free throw, 8 boards, and 2 steals a game. I have them as a 7 seed.
Very nice 7 seed there in Florida. And Joby, the top of the say is that we have Alabama, but the losses we already mentioned, they got kind of lost pretty badly to Arkansas and struggled at Mississippi State. Is it cause for concern for the
Tide? Well, yeah, and let's go a game earlier. Vanderbilt was a struggle. That was the game that kind of tipped this thing all off. You had Alabama ran Georgia out of the universe, not just the building, with 115 points. And since that time, it's as if they've been reading their own press. But really the issue is, Oates is starting to tinker with his lineup a little bit, trying to find something post that Vanderbilt. And so are people losing confidence? You know, should Quinterly be starting to be is a legitimate, or should Ellis or Primo, who kind of was starting during this whole entire run, but has hit a very much of a rough patch. So, you know, this, when we talk Alabama, you talk Petty, you talk Jones first and foremost, but it's actually the guard play that you have to watch. If they don't get, if Oates doesn't get the flow, because they're so dependent as a system team on flow, getting those threes, getting those layups, getting those backdoors, and with just tremendous defense, which actually has saved them, I might add, against Mississippi State. It was the defense, not the offense, that saved them. They were woeful from three. If Alabama cannot get that rhythm back from the guard play, then this team that I personally think was a Final Four and still has very much the potential to be a Final Four team, they're going to have trouble getting out of maybe even the first weekend, as evidenced by the Vanderbilt and Mississippi State games, as much as losing to an Arkansas team who now is a protected seed in my book.
I know we're a week away from the SEC tournament starting, but how badly does Alabama want to play Mississippi State in the quarters as opposed to Kentucky? That is a dangerous opener for someone who's trying to get back into their winning ways and a winning rhythm.
I agree, Joe. I think Kentucky, just because of how talented they are, I keep waiting for them to click sooner or later. Well, it's getting later and later and later. It might happen in the SEC tournament.
The upcoming schedule here, Stalika, interesting week for Missouri, a team that's sitting at 7-7 in conference and two tough games. They could be 7-9, which is at the end of the SEC season. That's not exactly where you want to be if you think you're a solid tournament team, is it not? Is it?
Not going to be where you want to be this year, but we also have to keep in mind they're not going to look at conference record as much this year, even though they say officially we're not going to weight it as much. But certainly, potentially losing to Florida and LSU, those are not going to be positive signs. So you look at their wins against Illinois and Alabama, looking more and more important for the Tigers now.
Yeah, I think the only other game really I've known in this conference is the Florida-Tennessee game coming up on Sunday to end the regular season. But
Tennessee in a tailspin right now.
David, let's jump over to the number one team in the nation, the Gonzaga Bulldogs, in the West Coast Conference. And the Zags just continued to roll, although a couple of the metrics, including Joby's J&G, now has dropped them below, I believe, below Michigan, but still number one in most people's minds. You know, they looked bad on Thursday night and they won by 14 points. I mean, that's kind of where the Zags are, right?
And it is. There isn't really that much to say. It kind of reminds me of the old Memphis teams from Conference USA when Calipari was there, where like they lifted a lot of heavy weight and were really impressive out of conference, then got in the conference and just boat raced the whole league. And you know, it's not that we don't want to put a spotlight on the number one seed, but what the hell else is there to say? On their mediocre nights, they win by 20. On their good nights, they win by even more. They are just way undermatched. And not that all these teams are bad. BYU is actually pretty good, probably inside the bubble, maybe even in on the first ballot. But no one holds a candle to Gonzaga in this conference, certainly. And they've played Iowa, Virginia, West Virginia. No one has really come within 10 points of them.
Well, you mentioned BYU.
Let me put it to you another way.
Go ahead, John. Put it in a way that I can't put it.
I was going to say, if you filled out a ballot for the Jerome this week, you would have gotten drop-down menus for about 10 to 15 different conferences where you could pick a winner. Right. In the WCC, there was an option for Gonzaga and another option for the field.
And I think everybody took Gonzaga, but Tytel, what about BYU? How did you know, got the win over St. Mary's to get the sweep over the Gales?
I still don't understand the metrics on this team because they have a road win at San Diego State and then not much else against the rest of the field. They did beat San Francisco and St. Mary's to finish the regular season at 19-5, so we like that, obviously. We use a little more consistency from Arizona transfer Alex Barcelo. 29 points and made all seven of his threes against the Dons. Then he only scores 8 points and misses all of his threes against the Gales. I have them as a 7 seed, but I assure you it would behoove them to make it all the way to the conference tourney title game before losing to Gonzaga again by double digits. If they somehow don't get there, I think not a red flag or a panic button, but serious concern.
Okay, couple notes here. As far as their metrics go, you look at these adjusted offensive and defensive efficiencies, both in the top 30. I think that's one of the reasons their metrics are so high. Second of all, I can pull up, I think here's the West Coast Conference tournament bracket. So they have to win one game to get there, as you can see. The semifinal on coming up on Monday.
They have lost to Pepperdine this year. So
that is the bracket. It is a very, very long ladder starting Thursday. Hopefully Portland will be playing. They are a bit of a question mark too, I know, coming out of a shutdown. Hopefully that they will be there. But at the end of the day, it's very likely to be the Zags and BYU round three on Tuesday evening for that.
Yeah, if you're playing in the first opening round, the 8-9-7-10, you got to win as many games to get to the championship game as you do to get to the Final Four in the NCAA tournament. This is a long.
Let's just go right ahead and jump over to the Pac-12, maybe if it's coming up here. And Rocco, USC did not have a very good week.
Not a team that likes elevation there, Chad. Okay. So they go to the mountains and, you know, I think you look at USC, they played Colorado, just got killed, absolutely killed. So you expected them to show up a little bit better at Utah, a team missing some really key players, the point guard, Rylan Jones, and Finnish national star, Utinen, right? So Utah still beat them by 10. It was like, what happened to this USC defense? They were one of the top defenses most of the season, and they give up 71 to Utah, 80 to Colorado, very uncharacteristic. So Trojans really need to step it up this week. They've got two tough games, home against Stanford in the home finale, and then they got to play the another battle of LA, this time in Pauly on Saturday. I think it cost them pretty dearly seed-wise, at least for now. Some people had them as high as a 4 at the start of last week. They're probably around a 7 now. So they've got to really start to make up for what they just did to themselves.
Yeah, and Joby, that they got that game against UCLA to end the season. UCLA at least split that mountain trip, right?
And they steadied themselves because they actually took Colorado. Don't let the final score fool you. UCLA had it. Yeah, that was a tight game throughout. UCLA could have easily pulled that one out. I think what UCLA can do is they can, assuming they don't fall apart against a poor team in the Pac-12 tournament, they can finally actually breathe easy to a degree, because even losses to USC and Oregon aren't going to kill you on your resume to go to 17-8. You get a win in the Pac-12. Yep. That Utah win, I think on the road, as much as Utah isn't anything special, it prevented the stub the toe element that was so likely to happen for how UCLA had played over the last month. Give UCLA credit for riding the ship, looking decent against the Buffs, and I think that they will be dancing despite the way that they have played over the last month. And that may sound, well, that's not, most people have them in. No, the way they were playing, they were trending on an awful route. I'm actually surprised they beat Utah as impressively as they did, and that should give them the confidence going forward. And whoa, like you said, USC, who's not playing as well, all of a sudden the game in Pauly is for first place, along with the game along, they get to host Oregon, they get to host USC. Wow, they have all of a sudden a chance to win the regular season title and propel themselves into white, not just in the tournament.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the conference ate itself a little bit. Like no one, not even the first place teams, really in reach of a protected seed. I suppose that they could get there. And I don't know if they just lacked like those. There were way fewer out of conference games this year. And in leagues like the Big 12, where they didn't play many, but they won the ones they did play. I don't know if the Pac-12 is just, no one's really broken away. And I think it's, you know, it's hovering around the 6 to 8 seed range, the top of the league, as opposed to the protected seed range.
Right. Tytel, I want to go back out to that mound trip again and go to the team that had the great week. How about the Buffs?
Another schizophrenic team. They lost. This is a team that lost to Washington and Utah and Cal from mid-January to mid-February. Then they sweep the LA schools at home. If they beat ASU on Thursday, God willing, then they have a shot at a top 2 seed in the conference tourney. It's hard to believe. They actually lost 4 games this year by 4 or less, but they're the best free throw shooting team in the country, 83%, which is in contention for the best ever in D1 history. I also feel obligated to mention their only double-digit loss all year by 14 in Tucson back in December. Senior point guard McKinley Wright leading by example. 15 points, 14 assists, 3 steals against the Trojans, 26.6 assists against the Bruins. I have them as a 7th seed as well.
And McKinley Wright's, he's making a case. Mobley's going to get probably Pac-12 player of the year, but McKinley Wright's first team, no doubt in my mind.
Stalika, another team that had a good week. It's currently leading Arizona at halftime as we record this. Oregon really running the ship. And, Arizona at home, UCLA at home, the game against Oregon State to end the season. How about the Ducks? I believe they control their own destiny for the one seed in the Pac-12 tournament even.
Yeah, they also got a win at Stanford, which I'll get into in a final thought later on. But the Ducks certainly going to have everything lined up here as far as the Wildcats, the Bruins at home. And you can't underestimate the Civil War to end the season, though, because Oregon State has been kind of feisty themselves.
Yeah, and both Oregon schools beat that Stanford team this week. And now they were without Da Silva, but at 14-11 overall right now, Stanford definitely trending in the wrong direction. Has only one game this week, it looks like, only at USC. Am I right on that, Rocco?
You are. Yeah, it's a huge one, obviously.
That's a must win, and they may need to pick up something in the conference tournament as well. So
I agree.
Let's jump over to the Mountain West now, where San Diego State, David, I think finally has asserted themselves. Huge sweep of Boise, even though it was at home. How can you now overlook this team?
You can't. And I was really big on them coming into the year, thought that they would sort of run away from the league, and they haven't done bad. 13-3 is hardly anything to sneeze at. But Boise was the team that I was the biggest on for most of the year. And when you beat them not once, but twice, albeit at home, it's hard to overlook that. Into the rankings, into both polls, probably climbing the seed list. And dare I say it, Chad, I think they're going in on the first ballot if they hold serve the rest of the way.
I'd agree with that, especially if they can capture the outright regular season championship, which might need Colorado State to win, to lose a game.
Yeah.
John,
not happening. They're playing Air Force twice.
They got two more games.
Those are front range games.
They got to go to Nevada Friday night.
Yeah, they do. They did get two more games added for this week. One or two more games added this week for the Rams there. But Tytel, how about Utah State? They got the sweep of Nevada. Kind of hanging in there. Do they have a shot at making the tournament?
Had you asked me a couple of weeks ago when they got swept at Boise, I would have said no. But after the home sweep of Nevada, I think so. Half game behind San Diego State, which is a team they swept in January. They're this close to the best record in the conference. Winnable games this week, Wyoming and Fresno. And it's been with the big man, Junior Namiash Keita. Phenomenal this month. 24 points a game, 11 boards a game, 3 blocks a game. Right now, wrong side of the bubble. If they can beat San Diego State or Colorado State or Boise State in the conference tourney, and then lose to one of them in the title game, I think they have a legitimate shot.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely have the work to, and they've got to win these last two games. Joby, is Boise settling in a little bit of trouble after getting swept by San Diego State?
Trouble, sure. Ever since Boise had their Nevada experience, that's really what their problem is. Boise's been floating in the dark jerseys, throughout somewhere in there. All that the sweep to San Diego State does is put them squarely in the first four. I think they're an ideal looking first four type team. That means don't lose to Fresno State. Take care of business to the degree you need to in your conference tournament. In other words, you can lose to Colorado State. You can lose to San Diego State. I think they'd still be in. You lose to Utah State. Utah State, just as Tytel points out, might be stealing your spot.
Yeah, and Colorado State obviously in the bubble talk there as well. Rocco, I don't know that we have any huge games this week. I think we have more of a bunch of must-win games this week before the conference tournament in this league. Would you agree with that?
I think the Colorado State-Nevada game is definitely worth keeping your eye on Friday night, because we saw what Nevada did to Boise in Reno. They're just a much different team in Reno, especially the last month. So that will be interesting. Colorado State's been dodging teams the last few weeks, so I'm kind of excited that they have to actually play someone. Boise, and to Boise's credit, like, you guys did a great job breaking them down. Those two games at San Diego State, that was close as you could get. Overtime game win, game tire to go to the first game one overtime, and then the second game was right down to the wire as well. I mean, they're right there with San Diego State.
Let's jump over to the American. And Salika, I got to start off by offering you an apology. Last time you were on the show, I think it was about 2 months ago, I buzzed you for talking about Wichita State. There they are. Your team is in first place.
Yeah, then there were about everyone except Joby laughing at me, and apology accepted. But along the way, Wichita State does have a win against Houston, which at least validates their standing here right now. But by the same token, a team like Memphis, for example, hanging around third, that's more, they're more or less paper Tigers. They don't have the quality of wins that a Wichita State or a Houston does. But by the same token, when I look at what Houston did to teams at home like Cincinnati and South Florida, the Cougars are still going to be the class of this league, even if Wichita State ends up winning, I guess, either at least a share or an outright regular season title.
And what Houston did to Western Kentucky this week as well, you know, just what we thought was a pretty good Western Kentucky team really turned it on the second half of that game. David, you had a comment?
Well, yeah, I was going to say Memphis, I want to say they've won 10 of their last 11. And while they haven't been beating up on tournament caliber teams because, well, quite frankly, there just aren't any to play in this conference, they are kind of running downhill right now. I don't know if they can play their way all the way inside the bubble unless they get Houston.
Yeah. I think that game got shifted to Houston. It's not at Memphis. I thought I heard that.
The game is at Houston.
Yeah. It says Houston at Memphis on the screen. It's actually Memphis at Houston. They shifted it to balance out home and road schedules for teams in the American this
year. Now, if they pick that one up, then obviously I think they don't just climb in. They get catapulted inside the bubble. I think that
– Yeah, I mean, Houston hasn't lost at home all year.
Yeah, but assuming they don't win that one, pull up their profile, Chad. I want to hear from our bracket guessing experts. Is Memphis – I'm not saying they're in. I'm saying that they're probably – they're close enough to where we should at least be looking at them and maybe talking about them.
Now,
tier one is a problem.
If you win at Houston again, that will not be that will be a road game at Houston. If they can pick it up, they obviously have to win at South Florida tomorrow as well.
Yeah, but you know, the problem is there just isn't a whole lot of there. It is really bland, but it's also relatively clean. The loss at Tulsa isn't good, but
they got swept. Tulsa
also beat Houston, Western Kentucky pretty good, Auburn pretty good, SMU pretty good at home, and VCU around the. Do they have a path assuming a loss to Houston?
Has to win at Houston. No path.
You think
that.
So? Okay, that is.
They got swept.
Path.
They got swept.
Well, David, they have a path if they lose to Houston. It's called win every other game that they have.
It's called win an auto bid. Yeah.
Yeah. Win the auto bid and hope Houston gets beat by somebody else. There's your path without beating Houston.
Yeah. Either way, they're going to have to beat Houston. I have a feeling in some capacity, probably. And they may need two wins over Houston. We'll see.
Let's run to the Atlantic 10 here real quick. And this is a conference that absolutely cannibalized itself, especially today when we saw Richmond, who was hovering around the bubble, lose a horrible home loss to St. Joe's, who was down near the bottom of the league. We also saw the Bonnies, who were in first place and have clinched the one seed, but they lose a home game to Dayton tonight, who is a decent Dayton team, but you got to win that game if you are going to need an at-large bid should you slip up. Tytel, are we going to look at Davidson again as being in play here?
Only because of the chaos that you just described. They started the week with a pair of losses to the Bonnies, which is excusable. Bounced back with a huge home win over VCU to finish their regular season with a whopping 7-4 conference record. Only 12 wins overall. They might end up as the 3 seed in the conference tourney, which would allow them to avoid having to face the Bonnies until the title game. Great interior shooting, 58% inside the arc, 5th in the nation. And you got to love Coach Bob McKillop. Used the same starting lineup for almost the entire season. I just wish he'd be more selective about who shoots the threes. His top three guys combined 41%. The rest of the team, 28%. Only let the three good guys shoot the threes, Bob. Come on.
Rocco, the Billikens also, they had a nice week. I had them almost completely off the board, but You win two in a row, including crushing UMass tonight. Can they sneak in, or do they need the auto bid?
I think they got to make a run to the final. Then they're pretty interesting, because right now the biggest thing hurting the Bills is just doing anything away from Chaffetz Arena. You know, the only win away from there is Fordham. So give me a run in Richmond, which is, you know, obviously very far away from St. Louis, and get to the final and lose to, you know, one of the respectable top four or five teams. And I think they got a really interesting case, because you got obviously a team that was shut down by COVID. They had a great schedule, missed out on some opportunities. They were picked to win the league. They have when they win at home, they do it very impressively. So I think there's a case to be made there if we get that scenario. Or maybe they lose a tight semifinal game, go schedule a non-conference game real quick against, I don't know, Rutgers, and beat them, and then do it away from home. That could also get them back in the conversation.
Well, Rutgers will be at the Big Ten tournament, so you probably need to.
Well, I'm saying if they lose their opener.
Yeah. Joby, real quick on the Bonnies, they are the one seed. As of the time we started the show, the A-10 had not yet released its bracket. It is expected tonight. So if you're looking for the A-10 bracket for the tournament that starts Wednesday, it's up there in the conference tournament tab. But on the one seed, the Bonnies, what are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, and they had the one seed wrapped up, so they obviously didn't care about tonight's game, because as long as you're the one seed in the A-10, aren't you in? No, you're not. The Bonnies are, I think, even with the loss tonight, the Davidson team that – Tytel referenced before, the Bonnie swept them over the last week. And that's, even though it was a tight one in North Carolina, that probably propelled them and gave them enough buffer for this loss to not wipe them out. But what it does is you've got no mistakes coming down the road if you're St. Bonaventure. You cannot make a dumb loss. Yeah, you can lose to VCU and you probably are okay. But now, all of a sudden, a random loss as the one seed out there. If all of a sudden you lose to Duquesne or maybe even Richmond, I don't know. You need to win a game or two in that A-10 tournament to really feel good about yourself. Otherwise, it's going to be very nervous on Selection Sunday.
Stalika, I want to jump over to real quick to one more team. They are in the top 25. It is Loyola Chicago. Finished off the regular season as the outright Missouri Valley Conference champions. How good is this Loyola team? Where do you think they end up on the seed list in terms of a seed, especially if they can get the Arch Madness title here?
I wasn't on your podcast the other night, but I think the Missouri Valley deserves a big shout out just for getting all their conference games in right here.
So every team got all really 18 games in.
Yeah.
And this is especially big if you're a team like Loyola Chicago or Drake, where you need to get that quantity of wins up, because the quality isn't going to be quite there. Because I think the Ramblers and Bulldogs ended up splitting with each other. So it at least gives the Valley a shot at getting two teams in there. But again, that assumes a lot of things. It assumes they will meet in the conference title game, which is rarely chalky in this conference.
Yeah, there is their path. They've got the winner of Bradley Southern Illinois to start on Friday night. David, you had a thought on them as well?
Who's this? Drake?
Missouri. Well, that's Loyola gets
the MVC generally.
Oh, yeah. Well, just to kind of echo what I was just echoing what Stalika said. Okay. But I think if Loyola Chicago avoids a quarterfinal loss, I think they go in on the first ballot.
I think Loyola Chicago is in either way. I think the bigger question of the Valley may end up being Drake. And yeah, how many? And I mean, I think a loss of the first round is awful for Drake. A loss of the semifinal. A loss of the semifinal becomes a very interesting debate. A loss in the finals to Loyola
is probably okay, especially if they get one of their key players. Like they've been decimated by injuries, but aren't they expected to get at least one of them back?
Well, Roman Penn's out for the season, but I believe Tank Canfield's hoping to play on Friday night.
I don't know if Drake's okay, even with another loss, even if it's Loyola. They will be extremely nervous. They're going to be rooting, ironically, against Bid Thieves, which you could argue that the MVC is usually that Bid Thief. So the Loyola is in good shape regardless, but, you know, they have the win over Loyola and that's it. And what helped them up for so long was the gaudy record. Well, the gaudy record has slowly slipped with their recent losses out, even outside of Loyola. So I don't know. I know. I just, I'm not there on Drake as feeling very good.
On that note, I think we're going to pull this down. Let's run to final thoughts here. And Rocco, I think you're about to say something. So let me start off with your final thoughts. You had a comment and then your final thought. How about that?
All right. Well, question for you, Chad. Do we get to break down the whole Valley bracket on the next show?
We will be doing that probably on Wednesday night's video notebook. Right. We'll go through all the
games. I'll do my best to make that because I'm excited for a lot of reasons in that tournament. So I'll save that. I do want to talk about a couple teams that we keyed on tonight. Georgia Tech, obviously big game tomorrow with Duke. I think a really important thing to remember is it's senior night and they have Moses Wright, Alvarado, Parham, Usher, all seniors. This is going to be a very difficult situation for Duke. To come in, highly emotional game. Duke also kind of dragging their feet after losing to Louisville. I'd be very surprised if Georgia Tech loses tomorrow, just based on the emotions of what that brings to the table, in addition to the pressure of the bubble. But I do think Georgia Tech's got to be careful this weekend because they'll then have to go play in Wake Forest senior night, and they have a couple key seniors like Jonah Antonio, and they're a dangerous team when they get hot, at least. And Georgia Tech might think they had it if they beat Duke. So just a thing to watch play out. Last thought, I think Kentucky almost mathematically eliminated from getting the double bye into the quarters. And I think that's really what they had to do to have a legitimate shot to win the SEC tournament. I think starting in that previous round and having to win 4 in 4 days with this makeup of this Kentucky team, I can't see it. I think they really had to get in the top four. And unless some crazy bizarre, they obviously have to sweep, but they need LSU to get swept and they need some other help to even get there. It's probably not going to happen for Kentucky, just mathematically.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen teams do 4 in 4 days. We've even seen teams do 5 in 5 days. I agree with you, not with this Kentucky team. Yes. Joby.
Yeah, I want to echo what Rocco said about that Georgia Tech-Duke game in a larger context. What's so great about this time of year is you have so many teams playing against each other for a chance, for a bid, a single bid. And Duke, yeah, you're going to go right from that Georgia Tech cauldron. Then you have the great rivalry, you know, with North Carolina. But it's not just in the ACC. It's all over the place. You're going to be seeing Indiana, Michigan State this week. You're going to be seeing later in the week I think both teams are in, but that UCLA run of Oregon and USC, these sort of games mean so much down the stretch. And it's going to be very interesting. This is why you watch college basketball this week, followed by the tournament weeks, especially in the small conferences. This is what people need to watch because this is where the excitement really will be coming in. You will be able to see it in the kids' eyes. If you are a fan of college basketball, this last week of the regular season is just as good in many ways as March Madness itself.
Yeah. Tytel, I want to give you a shout out. First of all, you did post your first half of your all conference awards on the website. So I encourage everyone to look at them. I know the Citadel was very excited about your pick there. Great pick, actually, I thought.
Yeah.
And then I also want to kind of criticize you a little bit because this is your final thought that you're doing to me tonight after what Nebraska just did to my Rutgers team, but go for it.
Purely by coincidence, Chad. Teddy Allen deserves my final thought because he's had an amazing adventure over the past 4 weeks. February 8th, suspended for violating team rules. Comes back last Tuesday, Pinnacle Bank Arena record 41 points, albeit in a loss to Penn State. Then he scores 7 in a loss to Illinois on Thursday. Then he's held scoreless in the win over Minnesota on Saturday. And today he announces he's leaving the team. In his defense, he's had a very rough time on and off the court. He's been at 3 different schools in 4 years. Grew up in Arizona, so of course I'm pulling for him. But I mean, come on, even Rutgers can't beat this team without Teddy Allen. Come on, Chad.
Yeah, well, they might have been a little addition by subtraction there. I don't know what's going on with them. I don't want to suppose anything either, but the Nebraska team played their best game of the year by far tonight.
Yeah,
by
they
far.
Did.
They were like,
it was like 10 like, miles was back. I mean, that's what it was like.
Stalika. You're back on the show. Why don't you give us your final thought and then I'll end with the puppet after you.
We've piled on Minnesota this year for being unable to win games on the road, but we have to look at a team like Stanford, who's had quite the incredible journey themselves, because they've had to start the season in Santa Cruz, of all places, and other various arenas, because they haven't been able to get into Maples until late January to early February. I'm pretty sure that two wins at home would probably be the low water mark for an at-large team if they're somehow able to get into the field right here. This was not a good week, losing at home to Oregon and Oregon State. I mean, granted, I think they do have the injury issue with De Silva, but this would be certainly a historical footnote if the Cardinal were able to somehow make the field.
Yeah, if they can, you're right. Although they may be doing with the most road and neutral wins ever all for a team, so maybe you throw that in there too. Dave, do you want to finish out the show?
Yes, it is March 1st. It is 9:30 p.m. Well, okay, it's later than that now, but that's about when it happened. I finally got to the place that Chad and I think Tytel, and I think most of you had been at since late December, early January. I'm giving up on Richmond.
All right, on that note, you know, the annual day that David gives up on Richmond, it gets later and later every year, I think. Yeah. But on behalf of John Tytel and Joby Fortson up here, John Salica right below me, Rocco Miller, you can check him out at bracketeer.org as well, David Grace with the other side. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back doing video notebooks at one later on this evening, which you can find either up or down or somewhere on the website.
Yeah.
One every night here on out. We'll also be doing a bracket rundown show coming up, I believe, on Thursday evening. But have a good evening, everybody, and we'll talk to you again real soon.